Welcome to How I Raised It, the podcast that goes behind the scenes with entrepreneurs who've raised capital. We uncover the tips, tricks, and techniques they use to get investors to write a check. Strap in and turn it up.
Hi, welcome to another episode of How I Raised It, produced by Foundersuite.com. Today I have Andrew Parker, CEO of Papa, coming to us from Miami. How's it going?
Good. How are you? Thanks for having me.
I'm good. Thanks for doing this. How's Miami? You're getting into the really nice weather in Miami, right? You've kind of got through the hot summer and now you're like, or is it still roasting there?
It's still pretty hot, but we have a couple days that have been pretty nice lately. So we're hoping that it'll be a cool winter, but we'll see.
Are you a native Floridian?
Yes. Well, I was born in New York, actually, but I left at a very young age, so I've grown up here, and this is pretty much all I know. I did have a small stint in San Francisco, as well as a small stint in Atlanta, but primarily here.
Cool. Great. Yeah, my wife's from Tampa, so I go to Florida a couple times a year. It's great. It's fun to beat the San Francisco fog by getting some nice warm weather.
Sometimes you're jealous up here in San Francisco.
All right. Awesome. So tell us, what do you guys do at Papa?
So Papa connects college students to older adults for companionship, assistance, and transportation. And we kind of refer to them as grandkids on demand. And that's really what they are. So an older individual that needs to go to the doctor or help run the house, or once he said he wants to learn to use a computer, can access what we call Papa Pal, who are the students. And it's available through a website or a mobile app. So it's a pretty good experience.
I saw your tagline, grandkids on demand. I mean, I think it's so, I love startups that have like a tagline or even a logo or slogan or whatever that you're going to remember, right? That's so memorable. It's so easy to understand. Good stuff. So I'm assuming the college kids are getting paid. Is it kind of like a DoorDash or something for grandkids or for helpers?
They do get paid. It's based on, you know, several different factors, location, time, distance, many other things. But yeah, they do get paid. They get a large portion of the revenue collected.
Awesome. So can they set their own hours? Is it the flexibility of like an Uber, or do they get into like a regular help cycle? How's it usually work?
Yeah, a typical person, once they go through the process and they're onboarded to the platform, all of the students, as we call them pals, they all have an app and they can review available visits based on, you know, some of these factors I mentioned. And then they could just accept them. And then once they're ready to have a visit, we kind of confirm it and we, you know, provide mapping instructions and tasks that are requested during that visit. What's interesting is actually that we're grandkids on demand. A majority of our members actually schedule like 24 to 48 hours in advance.
Okay, interesting. I'm assuming these college students are not, you know, trained as nurses or elderly care assistants. So is it more running errands? Is it kind of taking all those activities that aren't healthcare related or what?
Correct. I mean, some would refer to them as activities of daily living. We're not a caregiving provider. We found that there are many caregiving providers and there's a big need for that, but we found there's nothing really before that, kind of in this pre-care space. And so they'll do non-clinical things, but the most impactful thing they're doing is focusing on the social aspects. So you may be calling because you want to go to the doctor, but then, you know, really you haven't seen any person outside of, you know, yourself in the last couple of days or a couple of weeks. And so just that companionship is really a big part of the value prop that we provide.
That's pretty interesting. Let's touch on that. I mean, does it become, maybe start off as tasks and errands and become just, I need someone to talk to and hang out with? Has it become like a friend on demand kind of thing? Or
yeah, I mean, that's kind of where the grandkid on demand comes from. So from my personal perspective, I was helping my grandparents out, driving them around, but I was also just there to hang out with them and talk about life. They would give me information and I would learn things from them and vice versa. So that's where the business idea came from. You know, I was helping my grandparents and then I hired a college student to help them. And then I realized, wow, maybe other people could have this. But loneliness is really a big issue. It's, you know, increasing premature death. It's increasing Alzheimer's. It's increasing depression. Yeah. And so that's really the value. Not always does someone call and say, I'm lonely. But when you have a 1 hour visit to go to the grocery store and it turns into a 7 hour day, you know, the value is evident to the person. So it's almost like companionship, but incognito. Most people don't want to say, you know, I'll pay for companionship.
Right. Yeah. So it's a little bit like a candy stripers, a for-profit candy stripers. Is that somewhat accurate?
Yeah, in a way. So candy stripers are more in the healthcare setting within a health system or a doctor's office, and this is more in the home. And we found that this is really just a very incredible way for an older person to connect with someone, you know, on their level and intelligence-wise, as well as have a good companion that can help them around the house.
Very cool. And how many markets are you guys in?
So we started in Miami in January, and now we're in pretty much every city in Florida. We do expect to open up 5 or more states in 2019.
I mean, you could build a healthy business just focusing on Florida and maybe Arizona, right? Like,
yeah, Arizona is one of the places we're looking next, but Florida has a significant number of seniors, and we're looking forward to supporting many of them.
Yeah, very cool. How long have you guys been around? When did you start this?
So we officially launched in January of 2018. We started just prior to that, and we just have been having a good year so far.
Cool. All right, so let's talk about raising money. How much have you guys raised, and over how many rounds?
So we've raised 3.2 to date, 3.2 million. That's, I would call it, I guess, 2 rounds. One was kind of, I call it pre-seed, or, you know, local angels that I had relationships with. That was a smaller round. And then recently, within about a month and a half ago, we raised $2.4 million from Initialized Capital and Sound Ventures out of Silicon Valley.
Awesome. Let's go chronologically. So you raised that first chunk from local angels, and you're in Miami. What was fundraising from angels in Miami like? It sounds like you knew some people already. How did you know them? How did you get to know others? You know, give us the lay of the land of raising an angel round in Miami.
Sure. I had never raised money before, but I essentially tried reaching out to everyone and anyone and found that to be very difficult. But I think the more doors I knock on, the better I got at it, the more I started to understand how it worked, the intricacies of it. And so we were able to connect with some, you know, kind of a higher income individuals that were really interested in what I was doing. Prior to Popeye, I helped, be part of an early stage company that grew to be very big called Indie Live, and that helped with my credibility. So I initially raised some money with a PowerPoint and some very, very minimal traction, really people just betting on me and my co-founder. And then, you know, after the second round, which was kind of our seed round, which is where the majority of the funding came from, we had some traction and we had gone through Y Combinator.
Yeah, I definitely want to talk about Y Combinator. Let's stay with Miami just for a minute. I mean, my impression, and again, it's probably biased on my knowledge of like the Tampa market, is, you know, you have a lot of wealth in Florida, you have a lot of wealthy people, but a lot of them made their money in real estate or other things, and they don't always understand startups. Was it hard to, do you have to like overcome that, or the fact that you had done a startup in the past gave you the right people?
Yeah. The fact that I had a startup in the past helped a lot, but there were still significant hurdles that I had to overcome. I was still a first time founder. This was a very interesting idea, but there was a lot of things that were kind of open-ended. Is this safe? Is this reliable? Is there any liability? Is this risky? Is this a caregiving company? Is there competition? Some of the typical questions, but I think especially with older adults, it became evident right away that I had to really be able to prove not only that I had a cool idea and I was the right guy to do it, but that it was a viable opportunity. And we were able to do that. It wasn't that it happened kind of in one chunk per se. I kind of had this rolling close for my pre-seed. And you know, some people were my best friends that gave me like a $5,000 check to get the ball rolling. But then we did end up getting some larger checks towards the end.
Okay. A couple more on that. So you had a rolling round. How many investors do you think you talked to? Do you have any sense of that? And maybe share more, just for anyone who's not familiar, how this kind of rolling round actually happened. Like, did you say, I'm raising $1 million, you know, come in when you can? Or did you start with raising 100K or 200K? Like, yeah. Any more color?
Yeah, and you want me to kind of focus on the initial pre-seed round?
Yeah, please.
Okay, cool. So first of all, I had no idea what I was doing whatsoever. And some of the people that I had talked to help me navigate this were not familiar with this approach. And so I used what's called a convertible note, which is essentially a loan instrument where you give a discount and or a kind of valuation cap. Which we ended up giving a 25% discount and a, I think a $3 million valuation cap. and then you have an interest and maturity date. So I'm like learning as I'm going, Googling, sure, trying to figure it out while trying to sell it. And what was really exciting about it was after time, I started to really figure out how to explain it. It wasn't easy, but what was funny is some of the harder things to do with some of these early investors were explaining how to actually, how the instrument actually worked, because most of them were not that familiar with it. So not only did I have to pitch Papa, but I also had to essentially explain a convertible note. So I started to really get pretty familiar with it. And the way the roll and close works is, unlike a typical price round, when, you know, when there's giving of equity and you have shareholders, this is essentially saying, give us some money. You know, we'll put kind of a line in the sand of what it will be potentially valued at, but we're not going to really do that until later. And that allows you to have this kind of rolling close. So I started off with like a $5,000 check from my best friend, and it ended up getting like a $25,000 check from like a neighbor that I grew up with. And then kind of took it from there and ended up meeting some higher level angels. So since it's this convertible note instrument, you could just sign it with a couple of pieces of paper, and it's kind of on an ongoing rolling basis.
Yeah, no, it's good. How long did it take to raise that that pre-seed?
Sorry, the pre-seed took probably about 3 months. I did have some initial success, I think, really because I harped on my opportunity that I had at MD Live. So just for some context, MD Live is a telehealth platform that allows you to virtually visit with doctors over the internet. And we sold this service to consumers. We sold this to employers as an employee benefit, and we sold this to health plans. Well, at the time, I essentially was talking with my strategy around, we're going to take the same concept of virtual visits with doctors, but, you know, kind of parlay it into in-home services with college students, and we're going to still sell it as an employee benefit. I already have a lot of these relationships. I could go in and do it, and it seemed like kind of a straightforward idea. So I was getting people hyped up about this concept, and I was hyped up myself. You know, later on, I found out that strategy didn't work at all. We found, you know, started to find one now that does work. But I think all of those little pieces were important. So I had a clear thought. I had a clear strategy. I kind of had experience in this very similar, if not exact, space. And, you know, I was a pretty good pitcher. So
did you raise money for MD Live, or was that a bootstrap business? And did it have an exit that you could also point to when you're talking to these investors?
Yeah, so MD Live, I was not the founder. I was one of the first 10 employees. I never was involved directly in the funding, but by chance, I did help get one of our large investments just through, you know, kind of networking at an event. That's kind of my thing a little bit. Sales was my job. MD Live has raised over $100 million. Oh. It's a pretty big company. It has 30 million members. It's kind of one of the national leaders in virtual care.
And any sense of how many angels you talked to in Florida just to do that pre-seed? I always like to give people kind of expectation setting, right, of what it takes to raise money.
Well, yeah. So first of all, not only did I talk to angels in Florida, which is not a massive network of individuals, I talked to people that aren't necessarily angels per se, like they're not actively investing, but they are accredited investors. So, you know, they're making over $250,000. For a couple consecutive years, where they have over $1 million liquid. I think there's one other factor, but I probably talked to over 150 people, maybe even more. I LinkedIn messaged people, I cold email people, I reached out to friends and family, and I really tried everything. There's no one method. I don't think that works. I think everyone takes their own approach, but my recommendation would be just start with one and go from there. You will hear a lot of no's. I'm sure you hear that on this podcast quite often, but a no is just, you know, closer to a yes, so just keep going.
Let's fast forward a little bit. How did you arrive at the decision to apply to Y Combinator? Where did that idea come from?
Yeah, so first of all, I had never heard of Y Combinator. We're a Miami company, and though Miami's ecosystem is expanding around the startup scene, it had, you know, still been very nascent and still very much so is. But I had started to hear some rumbles about this incubator. I've heard about hundreds of incubators, a lot of recommendations to do one. You know, I was a little bit against them. I just didn't think it was right for me. And that was obviously wrong. But that was kind of my thinking at the time. But I did say, you know, what's the best one? Or what's the top two? And so I had started to hear about Y Combinator. And then I started doing research and obviously realized how incredible it is. So I applied about maybe a year and 2 months ago. All we had was a really crappy website, like a non-functional app, but you could download it if that counts. And maybe one or two people that had ever used Papa, maybe like five students, did the application and just never heard back. So again, 6 months later, kind of forgot about Y Combinator, said, you know what, I'm going to reapply. We have some traction now. So I reapply. But again, I kind of forgot about it because I just thought it was impossible. There's only been one other company in Florida's history that ever went to Y Combinator. So I didn't even think it was plausible, but ultimately decided to apply, you know a lot about it now. And then found out we got an interview, and then I became obsessed with Y Combinator. And you know, for me, I was like, maybe the application for me typically is not my strength, but I think I'm pretty good at interviewing. You know, we're going to nail this, me and Alfredo. So we went there and we did that.
Yeah, interesting. So you said you became obsessed. So were you working the back channels to kind of prep, or how did you, you know, how did you channel that obsession?
Yeah, maybe my obsession's a little different. I don't think that we overdid it on, you know, the back channeling at all. I did have one person that I had connected to in San Francisco once and said, you know, hey, any recommendations? And he actually gave me a pretty cool recommendation that I think for me is perfect. I mean, I'm not really the type of person that's going to spend hours and hours and hours researching things. I just am more of a doer in that sense. And yeah, I think that's some of the value I have with Papa. And Alfredo's more of the researcher, and that's why we're good partners. But found this kind of fun tool that would go through like historical interview questions. It would be like 15 seconds, and then it would say like, oh, you lost, whatever, if you don't respond. And it allows you to really get a cadence of responding to interview questions that potentially may come up during an interview. So went there and did the interview, and didn't over prepare, but was definitely prepared, and we were able to get in, and it was the best experience.
Yeah, that's amazing. No, that sounds awesome. So you found a tool. What was the tool called?
I don't actually think it had a name. Like some Y Combinator alumni developed some sort of Jimmy rig where it was just like a little link. I actually don't even know where it was or who sent it to me. I believe it was the person that I met that recommended that I look at some tools, but it was literally just like obvious questions where it's kind of a fun little game where essentially be like, what's your company? What's your valuation? How long have you been doing it? What's your traction? Why are you the good partners? And like every 15 seconds, it either explodes or you got to press the space bar to continue.
Yeah, that's awesome. I'll have to Google that and I'll try and add it to the comments. Well, I mean, I like that. Like my wife tutors SAT students, and the little secret of the SAT admissions test, you know, for college is basically anyone can get a perfect score if you simply take enough practice tests. Like literally, even if you're not a great test taker or you're not even, you know, that smart, you can get a perfect score if you just take enough tests, because it's like pattern recognition, you know, identifying how questions are phrased and things like that. So that's a cool idea.
Yeah. Well, my wife's in a testament to that. She got practiced like crazy and got like a 1500, and I barely looked at it, and I don't want to say my score on the internet.
It's okay. Cool. All right. So you guys get into YC. That's exciting. And then I guess you have to move. Was it just you and Alfredo still at this point? Or did you have a team? Did you have to move out to California for a few months, I assume?
Yeah. So me and Alfredo moved out. We're the co-founders. At the time, we had, I think, three or four other employees total, about six of us, five or six of us. So him and I moved out. What was kind of good timing was he actually had just had a baby like 4 weeks before. And he had just had a baby like 4 weeks before. And so it was perfect because his wife is on maternity leave. And I went, and my wife by chance happened to be able to get approval to have her work where they had an office there. So all four of us went out and lived there for 4 months, and it was awesome.
All right. You know, that sounds fun. So tell us about the program. What were some of the key highlights you learned? You know, what was the biggest takeaway from it?
Yeah, for me, the number one thing, other than kind of the end part, which I'll mention, is just the perspective and then the network. You get really great opportunity to learn from people that have gone through this before, not necessarily pop-up, but built a company, raised money, failed, been successful, had problems, pivoted, had to hire people, make mistakes and be successful, sell, not sell, whatever it is. And just to get that from, that type of caliber, the Airbnbs and the Dropboxes of the world is insane. So that's just amazing. And at the end of the day, it's still data points. No one's going to know your business better than you. It's not like there's a silver bullet. No one's going to be able to say, you do these three things and you'll be successful. That's just not how it works. And I think some people think that initially, and you kind of learn over time that you know, the reason you're the one doing this is because you're the one that should be doing this, or you're not, and you just shouldn't be. So that was really important. Perspective, and the network is awesome. I mean, there's a lot of people that you can reach out to, and, you know, it's not like an automatic connection, but it is somewhat of a credible method of connecting to people. But then at the end, for us, and I think it's different for everyone, the magical demo day really is magical. I mean, you get on stage, you talk for 2 minutes, you present to 500 plus venture capitalists and angel investors, and it's the best stage to be on for that type of an experience. And it creates something that I don't know that we'll ever be able to replicate again, unless we go through, I think they have a Series A program, which is like this time constraint around you either got to make a decision to go forward with this company or you're going to miss out. And you possibly have 5 minutes or you possibly have 48 hours.
I want to get to demo day, so we'll pause on that for a minute. But in terms of like the learnings and the perspective and stuff like that, did you get more from the lectures and classes or more from like mentoring sessions? Did you have a lot of mentoring sessions? And yeah.
Yeah, so I think it's different for everyone, but I would say Alfredo and I got the most out of both. But I think a lot of the nuggets that we got that I think stuck with me mentally are what we experienced during the dinners, which is typically an XYC, YC alumni comes up that's been successful or failed and gives some tidbit about, you know, they give their story, but also a tidbit about some of their experiences. And I think some of the things that came out of that had been the most powerful. The mentoring is super valuable as well. And it's really just as valuable as you make it. So if you come to them and you're like, oh, we're killing it, we're doing everything right, you know, you're not going to get a lot out of it. But we really put ourselves in position to say, okay, what two things are we really screwing up today? And is there anything that our mentors could help with? And that's really where we spend our time focusing on. And then you just go back to work. You know, you listen to them and you try to make those adjustments or you factor it in. And we made a lot of really big and hard decisions while at Y Combinator. And I think the mentors helped us to make sure, you know, us mentally were thinking like, okay, this is the right move.
Yeah, I like that approach. Kind of like identifying, yeah, what two things are we screwing up, and let's go to some smart people for advice. Do you have, how's it actually work? Do you have assigned mentors, or are there just kind of some people hanging out there that you can tap on when you need to?
You have you're part of a group, and we had three mentors in our group, and the groups are broken down. So we can take, you know, what's called office hours anytime we want. We typically would do office hours once. If there's something specific, maybe twice, but then you could also leverage other partners. Like if there's a partner that's really good at, like, you know, Google Ads or something, or a partner that's really good at, you know, security or infrastructure, or a partner that is kind of a software as a service, you could pick their brain on certain things. So based on what you have, you know, you may target certain people, but 95% of the time you talk to like your essentially assigned mentors, and our mentors are awesome.
Yeah, cool. That's great. And I've heard people talk about Bookface, which I guess is the internal kind of Yelp for investors. Is that, did you lean on that? Can you share anything about that?
Yeah, I can't share too much, but it's a helpful tool.
Cool. All right. So demo day. Demo day was in August?
Yes. I think August 20th. If memory serves correctly.
And, you know, so I guess it seems like a lot of YC companies are already halfway funded or part funded by demo day, or maybe it's just happening, like you're saying, right at demo day. I guess here, the question is, how much, you know, investor outreach did you do leading up to demo day, or did you just kind of like get your pitch ready and then rock it on demo day and then gather the inbound interest afterwards?
Yeah. I think we were a little bit unique. So definitely the recommendation is to wait to the end. You're in a way doing yourself a disservice because demo day is this magical day that I kind of mentioned. But it definitely depends on what you need. So unlike most YC companies, we probably 20% fell into this category where we were like a business that was already running. So it wasn't significant, but we had customers, we have employees, we have bills to pay. We had a little bit of funding, but unfortunately, actually at some point we realized like, wow, we're actually spending too much money because we're experimenting a lot, but we're kind of not able to, we may not make it to demo day. It was pretty scary, actually.
Oh, wow.
So during Y Combinator, I had a session with one of my mentors, and I said, listen, I know you guys don't want us to raise, but I'm going to have to raise something because I may not make it a demo day, or we'll have to make some huge cuts that would essentially reduce our growth quite significantly. And that's the whole point, like getting the demo day with like the best growth you can possibly have, or, you know, if you have them. And so we had to raise a little bit of money while we were there. And thankfully I had people that had tried to get in just before YC, and I was able to, you know, reach out to a couple people, and it wasn't overly difficult because at this stage we were YC, we had growth, we kind of were on a path to success. Demo day was coming up, so, you know, we positioned it as such. But I would say most companies did not raise before unless some sort of crazy opportunity came by, or they just thought demo day they weren't going to be able to show the way they wanted to, and this was their chance. So you have to always make a decision based on your business needs. It's not a one size fits all.
Yeah. Do you get a list of like who's going to, which investors are going to come well in advance so you can start building a target list? Or is it more curtain rises, you go on stage and, you know, what comes to you kind of thing?
That's a good question. I don't think we got like an official list. I don't recall that off the top of my head. So I feel like I would have remembered that.
Yeah.
You could kind of assume that every venture capitalist will be there. So if you drop a pin, it's going to hit someone that'll be there if you're in Silicon Valley. So that wasn't really much of a thing. I did reach out to probably a couple that I thought would be really good for us. And frankly, I was wrong. I mean, that just wasn't the right fit. I think I was going more for like Series B, brand names that I had heard before. And, you know, we're at a stage more for angels or seed funds. You know, you can take VC money at any point, but just thinking about like the best way for our business. And ultimately we were able to present and be really fortunate. So we actually closed just walking up to onto the stage, like 5 minutes before I presented, I ended up closing the round. And that's only because there's like this pre-demo day thing called Alumni Day where all the alumni come, and, you know, one of the alumni is also a venture capitalist. So that was helpful.
So that's very interesting. I did not know that. So 5 minutes before you closed the round, I guess two questions. Congrats. That's exciting. You know, but why did you decide to close it before seeing what kind of other interest you got from the audience, right? Like, was that, did this investor kind of poach the deal before it could really be marketed, you know?
They didn't poach it, I don't think. I wouldn't say that. They were the, like, if I wrote down a list of who I wanted, they were who I wanted. So it's like, why go to the World Series if you already won it by the time you got there? So that's just, I think, was a unique situation. I would definitely recommend to wait to demo day. Typically, we did raise a little bit like right after demo day, and Sound Ventures came after. But, you know, we also, I'm a salesperson, so it's a little hard for me to manage this different. I just kind of, it's in my blood to go forward. But we really were able to be successful with the funding team that we wanted. We did get poached in a way from a couple others that were really trying to get into our opportunity prior, but, you know, we were not really biting on that. It's just this one in particular was who we would have chosen if it was demo day or if it was a year from demo day. So it just made a lot of sense for us.
Are you at liberty to disclose? I mean, I think it's in PitchBook. I'm looking at the name of who it is, or do you prefer not to?
No, I can say it's already been press released out. So our kind of primary investor was Initialize Capital, which is Alexis Ohanian and Gary Tan, excellent partners, and their team. They're all amazing and very supportive. And, you know, we've only been working with them for a short time period, but it's already proven to be incredibly value, and I'm very happy with that. We also got from Sound Ventures, which is Effie Epstein and Ashton Kutcher and their firm. And then a couple YC alumni, but we're very happy with the organizations that decided to partner with us. They're all incredibly supportive, and you know, we really see them being our partners for the long haul.
Yeah, that's exciting. Okay, with those names, I can see why you might close the round before going on stage.
yeah, but it was fun, and we got a lot of good feedback. You know, how to say no to people, but it was just a really fun day for us. And you know, I was talking to my partner the other day, my co-founder, and just saying like that was probably the coolest day of our lives.
Hey, we have to say wedding day, right? After wedding day,
of course. Well, wedding day for me, and then the birth of his child for him, and then of course, Y Combinator outside of personal things.
And then demo day. So So you go on stage, you say, hey guys, you know, here's what we're going to do, but we've just closed the round from these guys. I'm assuming that must have created a little bit of frenzy from people in the audience. So did you do anything to like capture interest for your next round? How did you leverage that to kind of build some interest for future rounds?
For sure. I mean, we got contact information from everyone that was interested, probably over 150 plus people were interested in what we were doing. We talked to every single person, 100% always got to be respectful. And, you know, they took their time out of their day to listen to us. And they're incredibly busy people, like more than anyone I've ever met. And, you know, just it was an incredible opportunity. And out of the respect of the program, I talked to pretty much every single person. And I let them all know, like, I'm so excited about this. I'm blown away by the feedback. We'd love to continue to discuss with you guys our future, and you know, we'll be in touch. Please, you know, we'll add you to our update, and we do that. And that's a really good way for, you know, any other entrepreneur to be able to essentially gather future interest. Like, you know, maybe half the people that liked were interested in Papa aren't even seed investors. Some of the people that go there are really focused on A and B, so they're not really a good fit. Like earlier today, I talked to one of the venture capitalists that I met there that wouldn't have invested in us even, you know, no matter how cool they thought we were or what they thought we had, because they just don't do it at that stage. So now we're in discussions with, you know, organizations like them for the next round.
Yeah, that's awesome. Did you take meetings with those folks, or did you just say, hey, I will reach out when we're ready to raise some more? Like, how much time do you spend on that? Because that can be pretty time consuming to meet with 150 people.
Yeah. No, I couldn't meet with everyone. I responded and replied to everyone. The ones that, you know, I thought may be a good fit for, you know, Series A, Series B, I did try to coordinate a meeting of some kind, you know, some of which just happened recently, some of which happened within, you know, a day or so, you know, post YC alum or demo day. So, you know, I think it's definitely important to be respectful of people. And, you know, I'm a salesperson at heart. That's really in my blood. And I always feel like I'm spending so much time reaching out to people all the time, trying to get them to essentially buy my product, invest in us, do something with, you know, with what we're doing. And that's still a big part of my role. And so if anyone wants to talk to me, I kind of feel like it's almost doing myself a disservice if I'm not responsive. You know, if you want people to respond to you, you should respond to them. So obviously within reason, I don't think that I should let my business go aside so that I can, you know, respond to people that, you know, said they were interested in Papa, but you want to make sure you're communicating.
Yeah, cool. So you added those guys, it sounded like, to a newsletter or an update. Do you do a regular, like, monthly newsletter, or what do you do?
Well, so we kind of have three different ones. We have our kind of our member newsletter, which is more around the Papa service. I have somewhat of a general update to, you know, friends of Papa. And then I also have a, of course, investor update to my actual investors. I do it more on a quarterly basis right now. I'd like to do it monthly. It's just we have so many things going on at once, and I'm really bogged down with, you know, trying to build some of these relationships with health plans right now.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. One small question on that, though. On the quarterly update to investors, what kind of things are you reporting? Just major wins and traction, or anything else?
To my investors that actually invested in Papa, it's major wins, traction, revenue updates. You know, it's nice, cute, you know, since we're offering service to older individuals with college students, it's cute stories, usually a link to a PR. We just got a lot of great PR. We were on the Today Show. We were in the Washington Post recently, in Forbes and Fortune. So, you know, those types of things. And I typically tell them what our plans are for the next, you know, 30 days or so. I try not to go too far out. I mean, we're a startup. It's hard to know what's going to happen next month, but kind of directionally where we're going, what we're working on, any new hires, you know, and then anything that, you know, maybe they could help us with, or I could potentially help them with. So that's kind of our typical update. You know, I don't want it to be too wordy. It's like four bullet points with like four or five things under each. Yeah. I just find that I get so many emails. It's just like short and sweet, direct to the point. You know, sometimes I'll be a little kitschy with things, but other than that, I just want them to know what's going on and make sure that they know I'm working hard to, you know, put their money to work and build this business and support, you know, this brand. And they feel pretty happy about it so far.
Awesome. This is great. All right. One or two more questions. I'll let you go. Anything you would do differently if you were starting kind of fundraising and all this all over again? I mean, it sounds like you did things pretty well, but anything you would have done differently?
Yeah, it's funny. I think everyone always says, like, I wish I did this differently. Like, looking back, it's really easy to do that. But if I think about, like, what happened at that time, I don't know that I could have done anything too differently. It's easier to say that I should have now. But, you know, I think the one thing I would definitely recommend is really understanding how the instrument you're using to raise money works, like really understanding it. Run through a couple scenarios, use tools like captable.io is a tool that we like to use, where you could essentially run a scenario around what happens if someone invests $1 million at a $5 million cap, and is it a pre-money cap or a post-money cap? So just really understanding the terms and how the different instruments work, and is it a note? Is it a safe? Is it equity? Is it, you know, what is it? So is it a loan? So there's so many different ways to go about it, and you can really bite your foot. I mean, there's some real bad horror stories out there about people essentially giving away their company. They raise $100 million and they end up with nothing once they sell it.
Yeah, yeah. Very good. All right. Well, I will let you go. So your website, if people want to learn more, it's joinpapa.com, correct?
Correct.
And anything you want to either plug, promote, new market launches, open job recs, anything at all?
Sure. Joinpapa.com to check us out, send us a note, sign up for our newsletter. You could call 1-800-348-7951 if you or a loved one needs services. We're always hiring college students, so please go on the site to apply. We probably will be hiring a chief technology officer soon. That's one of our main hires. And if you're a health plan, please reach out.
Very cool. All right. Well, Andrew, this is fun. Lots of good nitty gritty behind the scenes. So I like it. Cool, man. I love it. So, thank you so much for your time, and, we'll catch you after your next round, and, congrats on Papa and your growth.
Thank you so much. I look forward to talking to you soon.
Okay.